I hate to interrupt what you're doing now, but something very important I need to let you know about. When you purchase Generous Coffee Beans, we want you to try to enjoy each brew for two reasons. Number one, because you're a part of something bigger, making a positive impact around the world. And number two, because we did not compromise on the quality of coffee. You're drinking some of the best coffee in the world. 100% of profits are donated to nonprofits that are fighting injustice facing humans around the world. Wow, that's powerful. Generous is best known for its specialty coffee, but the heartbeat of Generous is their hope to use for profit business for good. In 2024, Generous is hoping to provide coffee to churches around the U.S. to spread a message within congregations that churches care about people, even down to the coffee they are serving and the people they enjoy. I apologize for that extremely long run-on sentence. If you have interest in hearing more about Generous Coffee, please reach out to their founder, Ben Higgins, at benhiggins@generousmovement.com. Thank you, and back to our scheduled podcast.
What's happening, work advisors? My name is Brad, and I am the host with a little more than the most, but not quite totally. You know, I'm an expert on nothing. That's why I like to call my friends up who come on here and talk to them and see what's happening. And today, we have a special, special episode. We have Jet Juergensmeyer. Now, you may not know the name right off the bat. I know him because he's a great guy, and I enjoyed our conversation. It was a while back, I will confess. This chat was a hot minute ago. So, Jet, if you're listening to this, I truly am sorry it's taken this long to actually drop your chat because it was really good. If you don't know Jet, he was on the hit show on Fox, Last Man Standing with Tim Allen. He was in the Little Rascals sequel, the remake of Adventures in Babysitting, which was a great movie. The 80s one was really good. He's got a hit song out, Falling 2. He's a musician. He's an actor. He is a board-certified doctor. No, I'm just adding that in. He's not really a board-certified doctor. I don't think Jet would have brought that up. But hey, Jet is a really great guy for joining us, and I cannot wait for you to hear our chat. But before we get to that chat, I want to remind you that you can follow Work Advice on the IG, Instagram, Work Advice for Me. You can email the show, workadviceforme@gmail.com. And please, if you're listening on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, any of those places, because you can find us most everywhere, leave us a review. Tell us what you think. Even if it stinks, I want to read it because it'll make me a better host. So leave us a review, like, and subscribe. So each week, you get to hear my voice or someone's voice from the Work Advice family pop up and entertain you. But before we get to the chat, you know, it's question time. And I have a question from Darlene in Pensacola, Florida. Darlene, I've been through Pensacola once. It's been a while. It's probably been 20-something years ago. I was in the military, so I was down there some. But Darlene writes, Brad, loved the Jenna Kim Jones episode. Well, thank you, Darlene. She was a blast. Brad, could you be a stand-up comedian? And do you think you'd be funny? Okay, Darlene, that's a pretty wild question because I think I'm funny all the time. I tell my wife jokes, she doesn't laugh. I'm like, why aren't you laughing? This joke is hilarious. She doesn't think it's funny. Joke's on her. I'm always funny, Darlene. And could I be a stand-up comedian? Possibly. I don't think I could because if I bomb, I would probably just go back in my dressing room or in the green room, and cry silently where nobody can see. Darlene, I would like to try stand-up, so maybe I'll reach out to Jenna and say, hey, let's me and you do some stand-up together. And then she'll politely decline because she's 100 million times better than me. Jenna, you're incredible. We, again, thank you for coming on the show. But, Darlene, I will be your stand-up comedian every week on Work Advice for Me. That's my answer to you. With that being said, thank you, Darlene, for your question. Let's go ahead and get to that chat with Jet.
Okay, so what did your childhood look like?
Well, childhood was kind of interesting because I was born in Nashville, mm-hmm. and my parents owned a restaurant in Nashville, and it was called the Nashville Palace. It's right across the street from Opryland. And when I was, about 3 years old, I started getting up on stage there and entertaining people, singing, telling jokes, and kind of fell in love with the idea of making people smile and making people happy and enjoy themselves. And that then bled over into acting. We had some family friends that are basically like family, the Mandrell family, the Mandrell sisters.
Oh, wow.
It was their mother. Yeah, it was their mother, Mary, that recommended to my parents that they try acting with me. And I was 4, and we met with my agent, who I still have in Nashville. And when I was 5, we started going out to California. So I've really kind of been in entertainment my entire life. And people ask me, well, where did you grow up? And I'm like, I kind of just grew up in a plane traveling back and forth because, you start going out to California when you're 5. You're still growing up at that point. Mm-hmm. So I kind of grew up everywhere and all across the country, but always in the entertainment industry.
So Barbara Mandrell was on Hee Haw, right?
She was. Yes, I believe she was. But they're like family. So I called them my aunts. So Aunt Louise, Aunt Barbara, Aunt Erlene. Wow. I grew up on stage with Erlene at the Palace. We had a dinner show there and I grew up on stage with her.
Wow, that's amazing. I grew up watching Barbara Mandrell, but I'm a little older than you. So it was I knew exactly who you were talking about when you said that.
Well, that's awesome.
So you get into the entertainment business, and I really want to know, your parents had to be such a huge help for you. What was it like having them set you up for success?
I'm very grateful. And I know that us kids, we take that for granted a lot, but having both of my parents with me at all times over all the years has really been a big help. They've just been so good with me. They've put away everything I've ever made. They've made sure that I always stayed grounded. They bring me back home to Missouri and I go work on the farm, and that's where I am when I'm not on stage or in front of a camera. I'm in Missouri, which is where I am right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm on stage, or I'm out on the farm and I'm on my horse and I'm working. And they made sure that family was a big thing for me. Faith is a big thing. And those are the things that really drove me to want to be the best at what I do and just continue to progress and be grateful for everything that I have.
So was it hard as an actor and growing up, because now you're out of, your formative years of school, was it hard balancing school life and wanting to learn and still wanting to be and still having to work, basically?
That's a great question. So I was homeschooled my whole life. So that really did kind of make it easier, if you will. But that made it easier to do my schooling on the road or while I was working. Mm-hmm. That did not make the schooling easier. That's how I will word this. My parents knew that they wanted to homeschool me before I even got into acting or entertainment. They knew from when I was born that they wanted to go the homeschooling route. And so they jumped on that bandwagon before it was even a bandwagon, before it was popular, before it was cool. Mm-hmm. And so I grew up being homeschooled, and that definitely made it easier for being able to travel and work. That's pretty much what every child actor does, is homeschooling. Mm-hmm. But I'm one of the few that actually did it my entire life.
Wow. That's amazing. I cannot relate to that. I was never homeschooled, but man, I totally understand where you're coming from. And it had to be hard because you would probably work 8-hour days, right?
I did. So now child actors are taken very good care of on set. So we're only allowed to be on set for certain hours, but absolutely. And on top of that, I have to do my schooling because we have to do a required amount of school hours on set every day. But that, I think it's been a minute since I was a child actor doing school on set. Mm-hmm. I believe it was about 3 hours a day. And that's great, but you can't do an entire day's worth of schooling in 3 hours. No. So I would then have to go home and do school as well, or get up earlier and do school before I even went to set. So it definitely had its challenges, mm-hmm. but I wouldn't change a thing if I had to do it all over again, because it made me who I am. It brought me to where I'm at in my life, and I'm very thankful for it.
Well, you talk about acting. I want to know, from an actor's perspective, what's it like? How do you pump yourself up to go audition for a role, and how do you handle not getting that role?
Now, I think that might be the first time I've ever been asked that, and that is such a good question. Oh, it's different for everybody. Everybody has their own way of preparing and practicing for whatever it may be. Everybody kind of has their own thing. For me, it was always, you know, going through it with my parents, reading over the lines, then go from that to actually acting out the scene in front of them, them giving me notes. If it was before the COVID days and everything was in person, or majority of the things were in person, you know, you go to the casting office, and before I would go in, my parents and I would pray in the car, and then we go in, and I was never very nervous because I grew up in front of people. Obviously there's those initial jitters when you first walk in the room or something like that, but those kind of go away for me, at least after I talk to you for a minute and I'm like, oh, good to see you again. I'm Jet. Can't wait to do this. Yada, yada, yada. Just kind of get those initial sentences where you speak super, super fast and you're all nervous and jittery. Get those out of the way, and then you can actually slow down and do the audition. But it definitely varies, you know. It varies on the amount of lines. It varies on the amount of actions, remembering little details to try to make yourself stand out and make your audition stand out from the rest. Cause those casting directors see hundreds of kids per role. So trying to come up with something that makes you stand out of that hundred makes them kind of go, oh, I remember he did this thing. And then watching your audition again and hopefully getting a callback. That's kind of what I would try to do every audition, what I still try to do for every audition. And I never really had to get super psyched up. It was just knowing that my parents were there praying before every audition, and just remembering to calm down. Slow is fast.
Well, I mean, you have one advantage. You have a really cool name. So I would be like, yeah, that Jet guy. You remember, it's not Mark. There's a lot of Marks, and there's a lot of Pauls, but there's not a lot of Jets. So you stand out.
That is true.
Yeah, name wise, you do stand out. So how many people were you up against for Last Man Standing?
Oh, man. You know, I actually don't know that, because I believe, I can't remember if I did I did a self-tape for the first audition for it. And so I don't know how many they sent in for that. I know that when you move into the producer sessions and the callbacks, and then meeting directors and meeting with the casting agent before you do the producer session, so that they can give you tips for the producers, that I would say is maybe a third or a quarter of the original people that audition, because the producers are busy, you know, they got a show to run, so they don't necessarily have time to sit through 150, 200 people auditioning for each role. Mm-hmm. I will say though that I know that there were some kids in the audition, like waiting room while I was in there. But I mean, I kind of zone all of that out. I kind of just go in there and I stay very focused. I stay very, I just kind of pay attention to myself. I don't sit on my phone. I don't play any games in there. I never had a DS or something with me in the audition room. I was always, you know, I knew that I was in there to do my job, and I needed to take it seriously.
So you came in the last two seasons, right? Is that right?
Yes, I joined season 7.
Okay, so you're joining, you came in with new Mandy, am I right? Is it new Mandy?
I did, Molly McCook.
What was that like? Because we had had old Mandy, and I don't want to say old like she's old, but we had had the Mandy for 6 years. What was it like adjusting with that on set? Because it's probably good for you, right? Because there's somebody else that's new to the family.
It did make it a little bit easier, because I was the kid, and a lot of kid actors get referred to as the kid or don't get taken as seriously because we are children. So I think it would have been a little bit more difficult for me to kind of get my foot in the door had I been the only one, because I'm the only kid on the show. Mm-hmm. But I will say that it was nice. You know, I reached out to Molly before we even got on set, and we both just kind of exchanged info and were like, hey, we're both going to be new. Can't wait to work with you. Those initial things. And that kind of gave me a friend, if you will, for that first day on set. We both, you know, didn't know anybody. So it was nice to be able to have that kind of footing. But everybody could not have been more welcoming on that show. Everybody from Tim to Christoph to the set deck department. I mean, everybody just was so welcoming. And for people who have been working together for so many years to just welcome the two of us into their show, into their lives, into their family, it was everything I could have hoped it would have been.
So with that, let's talk about music, because, you know, you're a musician, and what musicians inspire you? I guess the Mandrills did, obviously, but what
absolutely
other
they well they the Mandrill sisters kind of taught me by just trial by fire, being on stage and what it really, really means to be an entertainer. I mean, if you watch Barbara and Louise and Arlene, they're just so funny. They're entertaining. They're interesting to watch. People want to watch them. They're not just there for their looks, or they're not just there for the music. They're there to be entertained. And they taught me a lot of that.
So what inspired you to write Falling 2?
Oh man. So that was one of the days. It's kind of a funny story how that song came about. I was sitting with my three co-writers on it, Pearson Swanson, Brian Sauerwald, and Kyle Winsky.
Okay.
And we were all sitting down. It was a morning write, and a couple of them are not morning people. So we were all kind of sitting there. Some of them were waking up, and just no ideas were really flowing or sticking together. Nobody was really feeling what everyone was putting down. And Kyle started just kind of strumming a simple progression, and Brian, being Brian, was humming along and saying out of nowhere the first two lines of the song, "If I speak my mind, I'll get caught up in all the detailed lines." Mm-hmm. And I looked at him and I was like, okay, can we write that? Because I don't know what it was, but it was cool. And it kind of transformed into this story that I would say 99% of people, including myself, can relate to, of falling for somebody and feeling like they're the one. And so we all were able to relate to this and speak from experience when writing the lyrics. And I'm super proud of how the lyrics and the music too came out, because I feel like the music tells that story of that young summer kind of love, just like the lyrics do.
Yeah, it's a great song, and people listening now, they can listen to it on Spotify, right, and iTunes.
It's out there anywhere you can buy or listen to music.
Yes, it's out there. So I want to ask you, you can only choose one of these, Jet. You can be an actor, you can be a voice actor, or you can be a singer. What do you choose?
Option 4, entertainer.
Oh, I like that. I like that. It's a good way to cop out on that answer. I like that. But you also do voice acting, which I bet that's a challenge, right? Is that harder than actual acting in front of a camera?
You know, I would say that it's different. It's not necessarily harder. I don't think any of them per se are harder than one or the other. I'm sure that my acting friends that are just actors are going to say acting's harder. My musician friends that are just musicians are going to say music's harder. I'm going to say that they're all just different. They all have their difficulties, and they all have their ups and their downs, but I would say they're all different. And voice acting is no different than being different. It's challenging. You know, you have to be creative, because it doesn't matter how you look. It doesn't matter how you dress when you walk into that room. It matters if you can do the voice. Can you do different voices? Can you do accents? Can you be creative? Can you give us three different reads of the same line? And if you can't do that, then voice acting might not be for you. And for some people, it might be difficult. For me, I think I've just done it so long that I kind of have my way of doing it. If that's, I don't even know if that's the right way to put it, but I'm just very comfortable in the booth. I do think that bled over into music just as much, because when I'm in the studio recording songs, I might want to sing a line a little bit differently. I might want to put a different feeling or inflection on that line. And thanks to my experience doing voiceover of being able to read the same line three different ways or multiple different ways, I can do that on my song. So I definitely think that they all help each other, but they're all just different.
So back to your singing really fast. You talked about being in the studio. How long are you in the studio for to record a song? How long does it take you in the studio?
That's a good one. It varies for every song. We go in with a full band and session players. They're some of the best in the world, and I'm super blessed to have them playing on my stuff. We go in, we do a session with them where we just track all the music for each session, and that could be 3 hours, that could be 5 hours. It kind of just varies on if we're getting what we're looking for, how much time we have in the studio. And then the one thing that I personally never like to rush is the vocal session and getting the vocals right for the song. So those can vary. Those can be 2 hours, they can be 3 hours, they can be 4 hours. Obviously, I don't want to break my voice by the time we get to the last song at that 3 hour mark or that 4 hour mark. Mm-hmm. So we usually try to keep it to two, maybe three songs if we're doing like a demo in there. And that's just one that I can just do like one pass through, and then that's good because it's just a demo. But if I'm doing stuff on my own, I want to take as much time as needed to make sure that it sounds right and that it truly tells the story of the song.
When you get on stage to perform music, is it nerve-wracking for you? Does it take you back to being in front of the casting directors, and just right when you get up there, it's sink or swim, right? You get up there, you just got to go at that point. Do you still get those?
Absolutely.
Because I feel like that would be harder than acting at times, because you're on a stage by yourself and you're singing, and it's, you know, you're performing live.
I would say that it depends. Being in the casting room is interesting because they're filming you and you don't know who or how many people are going to watch that recording. Mm-hmm. And then it's recorded, so it's there for forever. So somebody in 30 years could pull up an audition and it might be just the worst audition ever, the worst performance by me. And now it's out there in the world for everybody to see. And oh my goodness, that just sends like shivers down your spine. But when it comes to being on stage, you kind of put it really well where you said it's either sink or swim, because you might have a crowd that is super into it and requesting songs and cheering and singing along and dancing. And then you might have a crowd that is the complete opposite. Nobody's interested. Everybody just wants to eat and leave. And one thing I've learned from that is perform like there's 5,000 people, even if there's just five, because you never know who's going to be in that crowd. You never know who's having a bad day and whose day you can make a little bit better by playing their favorite song or just shouting them out and talking to them, asking them where they're from, making or helping them forget about whatever it is that they're going through, for even if it's just, you know, 3 minutes for a song. That makes it all worth it. And that's why I love entertainment. And I think I speak for a lot of people, and dare I say majority of entertainers, as to why we do it, because we love entertaining people. We love making people happy, and it's a lot of fun. We like making people have fun. Laughter is just a great healer.
It totally is. So a couple more questions. One, what's your favorite band of all time?
Oh my goodness. Oh no. There's so many.
You can only choose one. You know this game, and you can't say option four.
Oh my goodness. I don't know. I mean, I could be very cliche and say the Beatles, because the Beatles have just inspired so much music and had such a large impact. I'm actually going to go with a band that is a backing band for an artist, because I've seen them a bunch, and I think they're some of the best musicians I've ever seen live. Ace in the Hole, which is George Strait's band. I think they're absolutely fantastic. Their lead guitar player, I don't know how old the guy is, but he is one of the best guitar players I've ever seen. And I love watching him and listening to that whole band. I think they are a great, great band.
It's funny how you can be a great band and a lot of people have never heard of Ace and the Hole. It's kind of like the Wrecking Crew in Detroit, right? You just didn't know, but
exactly.
They were on tons of albums.
Exactly. Like, I mean, I could have said a band, you know, like Blink 182, or I could have said Red Hot Chili Peppers or Arctic Monkeys, but everybody knows them. I wouldn't, that I think Ace in the Hole is definitely a band. Like you said, they're not just a band. Like, they don't put out music. They're George Strait's band, and they are just so, so phenomenal.
Okay. Another question. This is you can't say Toy Story, your favorite Tim Allen movie.
Okay. Oh my goodness. I feel like Santa's a classic one. Santa Claus movies are a classic. I grew up watching those. Even though you told me not to say it, I am looking right now in my room at a Toy Story picture signed by Tim to me. So I grew up watching Toy Story, but I'm going to say, since you won't let me say Toy Story, the Santa Claus franchise.
See, I was hoping you would say Christmas with the Cranks. I really enjoy that movie.
Okay, that is a good one.
My wife wants us to watch that every Christmas, so it's a...
That is a good one. What's that other one? Galaxy Quest. Such a good one. That was so funny.
It is, and For Richer or Poorer was good. That was before you were born, I'm sure.
That is... I do know that movie, though. Yes.
That was a good one. Joe Somebody was really good. I mean, he's got a lot of underrated good movies.
Well, I mean, he's a legend, so he's got a bunch.
He is. And this question, I'm sure you're not going to answer, but I would not be doing my job if I didn't ask it. Who's your favorite Mandy on Last Man Standing?
Well, I only ever worked with Molly McCook, so I'm going to say Molly McCook.
I like that. You answered it. I like it. I like it. I like them both.
Of course.
They were so drastically different looking, though. They didn't look the same.
You know what I think was the best is I was a fan of, actually, I was watching Last Man Standing when I got the email for the audition for Last Man Standing. I'm not kidding. Okay. I cannot make it up. So I was a fan of Last Man Standing before I even got on the show. And so obviously the original Mandy, she played that character so well, and she made it her own. And I think Molly did the same thing. I think she made Mandy her own. And that way it's too hard to compare them, because they put their own twist on that character, which is exactly what I think everybody strives to do as an actor, and kind of leave your mark on that role. And I think both of them did that well, and I think Molly did it like nobody else could. I don't think anybody could play that role like Molly.
No, she did great. It's such a great show. If the listeners have never watched it, they need to, because it's a great show. I was watching it too, and you know, you said something. I might as well ask you this. What was it like when you got that email? I bet it was exciting. You're a fan of the show, and now you have a chance to be on the show. That's got to be an amazing feeling.
It was surprising. It was surprising because my mom read, she's like, oh, I just got an email from Oz Brink, which is my agent in California. Mm-hmm. And she was like, huh, it just says it's for Last Man Standing for Boyd. And I think we were eating like Jersey Mike's or something. I was like mid-bite. I was like stopped straight out of a movie, and I looked over at her, and then I looked at the TV, and I'm watching Last Man Standing, and I freaked out. I was like, are you kidding me? Let me see it. Oh my gosh. It was the coolest thing ever. I was so excited.
You can't make that up. That's amazing. That's amazing.
You literally can't make it up. That is, which I think a lot of people think I'm making it up because it sounds made up, but it is so genuine.
That might be the coolest thing I've heard on this podcast. It's very cool. You're eating Jersey Mike's, watching Last Man Standing. You get an email about an audition to be on Last Man Standing. I mean, it's incredible. It's so incredible. So lastly, what's next for you?
What is next? Man, I am continuing to do a lot of music. Obviously, Fallen 2 came out. I have a few more songs that I'm going to release before the next album, which I'm super excited to talk more about once I kind of have it finalized and have a set date for it. Mm-hmm. And I'm performing a lot. I'm performing all over. I just performed yesterday here in Missouri. I'm going back to Nashville tomorrow because I've got some gigs out there. And I'm just super excited for this next stage, next phase of my life.
Well,
you can know I'll be following you. I'm a fan, and I enjoyed our conversation. Thank you for taking the time to chat with me for a few minutes. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a lot of fun, Brad. You'll have to have me back.
I would love to. You just tell me when.
Alrighty.
Thank you. You have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that chat with Jett Juergensmeyer as much as I did. Man, Jett is a talented, talented dude. Thank you, Jett, for coming on. Now, you know the drill. If you are listening right now, like and subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, anywhere. Leave us a review. Follow us on iTunes. Yeah, follow us on iTunes. Follow us on Instagram. The IG is Work Advice For Me. I looked to the side like I'm reading, but I wasn't really reading. And you can email the show, workadviceforme@gmail.com. So I think I'm going to go watch a little bit of Last Man Standing right now. Just get my little Jett Juergensmeyer friend on and watch him. Man, he was good on that show. I really enjoyed it. Jett, thank you again for being a part of Work Advice For Me. As always, Work Advice For Me is brought to you by Hopecast Podcast Network. We love it here. And I think I'm about to bounce. So for Work Advice For Me, my name is Brad. I almost said my name. My name is Brad. I'll catch you on the flip side.